So we're going to move on with the first of our experimental mini modules. We'll see what you think about it. We just like to sort of change things up a little bit. We've had a lot of interesting experience in the last couple years in terms of communicating with people. And I feel like I know this painting behind you, Tom. I've seen you so many times. How are you doing today?
It's lovely to see you, Neil. How are you?
Doing great. So I'm really curious what we can cover here in the next 20 minutes about renal cell cancer. And of course, you know, one of the key questions in this disease is first line therapy of metastatic disease. We asked you to put together a talk, which we're going to ask you to go through in a second. But before we get into that, which is the issue of triplet therapy as upfront treatment of metastatic disease, I just wonder if you could just sort of summarize, you know, without any slides, just what your thoughts are right now in terms of how you approach that decision. Of course, you have a number of TKI-IO combinations. You have Ipi-Nivo. You know, if you're making rounds with your fellow, you don't have any slides. How do you talk about making that decision right now?
So the first thing I say is don't get too caught up in the differences between the regimes. We can spend the next 2 hours discussing the detail of that. But the conclusion is that there are a series of PD-1, VEGF combinations, Cabo-Nivo, Len-Pen, Axi-Pembro, those three. And those three regimes have very, very similar data sets. Now, you can argue that axitinib has got the shortest half-life. You can argue that Len-Pen has the highest response rate. You can argue that Cabo-Nivo has the best quality of life data. But essentially, they're like identical triplets. They have many more similarities and differences. The different regime is Ipi-Nivo, where it's a VEGF-sparing regime. The response rates is lower. The initial control of disease is less good. But there is a discussion about whether the ipilimumab is associated with more durable remission. And it's certainly true that after the first 12 weeks, it's attractive to be on single agent Nivo rather than the combination of VEGF TKI IO. So in summary, pick one, use it well. It's much more important to have good backup for your patients, good information, good support networks, rapid intervention when toxicity occurs, identification of immune-related adverse events, and knowing when to intervene with steroids than picking between Cabo-Nivo and axitinib and pembrolizumab.
What about the issue of between IO-TKI and Ipi-Nivo? You know, you can look at guidelines, you can look at trials. We ask people what they do. And one of the things I sort of hear, I think, is it seems like people favor Ipi-Nivo unless the patient is symptomatic and needs a response. I mean, that's my simplified way of looking at it. Is that the way you look at it, or maybe a little bit differently?
I actually don't look at it that way. I'm not as convinced that Ipi-Nivo has any data to show it's preferential over the VEGF-TKI PD-1 combinations. So I would not say that that should be favored. And I would argue potentially that there are clearly some patients who should have VEGF-TKI IO, but I'm not clear which patients should have Ipi-Nivo. And I'm going to talk a bit about this in a minute with some of my slides. You know, I think we've been through peak Ipi. I think the ipilimumab data from 2 years ago with that excellent PFS curve was the best data we've seen. What we've seen since then is more data, which hasn't been as compelling. You know, the adjuvant Ipi-Nivo trial was not positive, for example. We'd have expected, if it was by far the best regime, we'd have expected it to do something, and it didn't. We've seen a trial called the PRISM trial, where we showed that actually there weren't as many long-term durable remissions. It was a randomized phase two, not a randomized phase three, all the caveats with that. There are some people who feel super passionately about Ipi-Nivo, and I have huge respect for them. I'm not anti-Ipi-Nivo. I just think it's in the same ballpark as the other drugs.
So the art of oncology. Again, before you get into your talk on these new data, what about second line therapy based on the initial direction? So second line therapy after ipi/nivo, second line therapy after TKI/IO.
So the first thing to say that's important is that if you've had VEGF-TKI/IO therapy or ipi/nivo, it doesn't appear that one regime afterwards is better than another. We don't have any data to support that. And the level of evidence in the first line setting is level 1A for ipi/nivo and all the VEGF-TKI/IO combinations. The level of evidence in the second line setting is currently level 3. But what I can tell you is three important things. Number one is there's no evidence that one VEGF-TKI is better than another one in this setting, and therefore use one you haven't used previously. You don't have to use Cabo. You don't have to use lenvatinib everolimus, for example. So that's number one. Number two, there's no evidence that continuing VEGF-targeted therapy, continuing immune therapy is the right thing to do. So once you've had one good go at immune therapy, the reintroduction of immune therapy is experimental. I know lots of people are doing that. And then number three is the role of everolimus remains very unclear in this setting. So it's entirely reasonable to go axi-pembro, cabo, axitinib, everolimus in that sort of order, using drugs you haven't used before, or len-pen, cabo, axi, everolimus. There's no personalized therapy. There's no reintroduction of immune therapy.
So I was just flashing on, you know, technology. Imagine being able to do this. You know, later on we'll have Georgina Long from Australia piped in here. We just did an entire day-long meeting with the Aon group in Las Vegas in August, and I was like, all the faculty was virtual. I was like, can they really do this? And so we set up, everything was going beautifully. In the middle of the conference, the Bellagio Hotel completely lost their electricity for 2 minutes. So we had to kind of deal with that. Anyhow, Tom, there was a really interesting paper presented, and I think it really ties into this whole issue of first-line therapy of metastatic disease, the COSMIC 313 study. If you could please review that. And get the slides on here.
Yeah, so Neil, the first slide here actually just talks about what I've said so far. And the one thing I haven't said, in good risk disease, there is a genuine dilemma. And it's not clear that you have to give immune-based therapy, PD-1-based therapy in good risk disease. And in fact, the Swiss guidelines group has recently changed their recommendation and put sunitinib on equal level with VEGF-TKI immune checkpoint inhibition. And then I've got those three triplets there just to indicate that there are more similarities and differences between them. And then a few points around the CTLA-4 PD-1 combination. And so that's really just a summary of what we've talked about so far. COSMIC 313 is a randomized phase 3 study presented at the plenary session by Tony Choueiri at ESMO this year. It's a trial which is an important study because it does two things for the first time. We explore a triplet for the first time, but we also have a contemporary control arm, in this case, ipi/nivo. I need to talk about that control arm before we go any further. Remember that from a response perspective and the primary endpoint of this trial, progression-free survival, ipi/nivo is about 10 months. That's what we showed in 214. And actually, the PFS for ipi/nivo is not that different from sunitinib. Sunitinib comes in normally at about 10 months. And you remember len-pen came in with a PFS of 20 months. Axi-pembro and cabo-nivo, both about 16 months. So although it is a new control arm and a drug, PFS is not the best endpoint for ipi/nivo. The study arm, cabo-ipi/nivo, is essentially the addition of cabozantinib at 40 milligrams. And the reason why we've done the trial is the feeling was, as you said before, for those patients with aggressive disease, there are subsets where you need to get that initial control. And so what we expected from this study was higher response rates and longer PFS, which would represent longer control or better early control. And what we hoped was the CTLA-4 would then give us that 10% tail on the curve. So we would hit PFS, response, and in the end, hit overall survival as well. So that's the background of this triplet trial. Remember, it's only in the intermediate and poor risk patients because Ipi-Nivo is not licensed in good risk patients. And this is a randomized phase 3 study of 500 patients initially. The endpoints are quite complicated. The study actually enrolled about 800 patients, but only 500 were assessed for progression-free survival according to the statistical analysis plan. And here you can see a 27% reduction in the risk of progression. The curves go apart and they stay apart. The control arm performs actually quite well. PFS of 12 months for Ipi-Nivo is actually very much in line with what you would expect from 214, maybe even a little bit longer. So I think it's an attractive endpoint. And of course, this trial hits its primary endpoint based off this data. The response rate is also intriguing here. The response you can see here is actually also higher for Cabo Ipi-Nivo. From these waterfall plots, you can see that. But remember the response rate that we've seen previously for Len-Pen and Axi-Pembro, the 50, 60, 70% response rate is actually only 55% here. And that's relatively modest with a 45% response rate for the control arm. So the triplet is performing probably quite similar from a response perspective to maybe Cabo-Nivo. It doesn't seem to be a lot better. And some people might say, actually, it's a bit disappointing. And the complete response rate in both arms was only 3%. Bernard Escudier, who's a mentor of mine from France, always said that he wanted to see a CR rate of 25% for the triplet. So I think overall, the interpretation of this slide was actually the response rate and the CR rate for the triplet was a little bit disappointing. It's also noteworthy that in the Ipi-Nivo arm, the CR rate was only 3% as well. Remember, in 214 previous trials, I don't think CR is a good endpoint in kidney cancer trials, speaking frankly. This is really one of the crucial slides because here we can see where we got into trouble and perhaps why the triplet didn't perform in terms of response and complete response as much as we would like. You can see here for the Cabo Ipi-Nivo trial, large numbers of patients not getting the full 4 doses of ipilimumab. And you can see study-related discontinuations of any study drug for the triplet of 45% versus 24%. What this is telling us is it was challenging to give the triplet. And therefore, it's possible that because it was challenging to give the triplet, we were unable to get the drugs in to maximize outcome. Monty Powell gave a terrific discussion at ESMO this year, and this is one of his slides. And this graphically illustrates that point. Proportion of patients receiving 4 cycles, and the COSMIC-313, the study arm, on the furthest right, only 58% versus 79% in 214. And the proportion of patients who requiring steroids, 60% for Cabo Ipi-Nivo, is actually really high, only 29% in 214. So it looks like the triplet is more challenging to give, and although it hit PFS, the response and CR data were a little disappointing. Perhaps one of the more controversial parts of this data, and one of the data that's most difficult to explain, is when we look at the intermediate and poor risk subgroups. And although the poor risk subgroup was small, when you first discussed this with me, you suggested we should be selecting those patients with aggressive disease for the triplet. But you can see here the benefit is isolated in the intermediate risk group, not the poorest subgroup. IMDC intermediate and poorest disease is not real. It's not a biological endpoint. the biology of this disease is more complicated than that. Risk stratification are based actually off hemoglobin and platelet counts, not off the biology. And we know there are subsets of kidney cancer, clear cell kidney cancer, that are VEGF-driven and others that are immune-driven. And actually, we can see that in the poorest group, they are the most immune-driven patients. And that's probably why Ipi-Nivo is as doing as well as Cabo-Ipi-Nivo. And there is a question now about whether VEGF-targeted therapy is doing anything in this poorest group. And this picture here on the right is one which I'm beginning to think about more and more in my mind. I said to you at the beginning that the Swiss have changed their guidelines for sunitinib for good risk patients. I've also just shown the poorest patients, the addition of cabozantinib to Ipi-Nivo didn't make much difference. And it's likely, in my opinion, that the biology of good risk disease is driven by VEGF. The biology of poor risk disease is driven by immune signatures or immune suppression. And therefore, what this tells us is there are definitely biomarkers that we should be using, and we now need to explore which patients need VEGF-targeted therapy and which patients need CTLA-4 therapy. The reason why we need to explore the CTLA-4 issue is the adjuvant CTLA-4 study versus placebo showed no benefit for DFS. This means that the CTLA-4 story is not clearly benefiting all patients. I think we can all agree on that. Now, whether it's benefiting anyone, we need to wait and see. There's a study of Ipi-Nivo versus Nivo coming out in the not too distant future, which is an important trial. But it is becoming clearer to us that we need to start selecting patients in clear cell renal cancer. We're not doing that well enough at the moment. The IDMC classification based off platelet counts and hemoglobin and neutrophils seems hopelessly outdated to me. What does all this mean? Well, I think it's fair to say that it's unlikely the COSMIC-313 data of Cabo Ipi-Nivo will have a big impact on first-line disease without any overall survival signal, which we've not seen yet. Why is that the case? Well, although it's beaten Ipi-Nivo for progression-free survival, Cabo-Nivo and Axi-Pembro and Len-Pen would have had a more challenging PFS curve, and it may not have beaten that. The role of cabozantinib in the poorest patients has now been highlighted, just as the role of Ipi in the good-risk patients has been highlighted. It's therefore hard to identify a group of patients who you would want to treat this triplet, even if it was approved. It's important to acknowledge that the IDMC poorest patients, we want to get control, but in that group, Cabo Ipi-Nivo didn't appear better than Ipi-Nivo, and I'm troubled by that. Triplet therapy looks difficult to give. It looks more difficult than the doublets, and that's probably why there was some impact on efficacy. It's important to note that this is the first trial that's positive to beat a doublet. That's a very positive thing, and it means we're moving forward in this disease. And indeed, there are other triplet trials around the corner. If COSMIC-313 comes in with a significant survival signal, it will change practice in the future, despite all of the caveats which I've said today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks, Tom. One final question, just to get your thoughts on a really exciting agent, belzutifan. Can you talk a little bit about how it works? And not only its use right now in von Hippel-Lindau, but also maybe its future use in sporadic RCC.
Yeah, so it's really exciting, a new mechanism of action. Bill Kaelin's work won a Nobel Prize with him and his group based off the HIF2-alpha axis, and belzutifan as an inhibitor of a transcription factor targeting HIF2-alpha. It essentially, HIF2-alpha is crucial in the VEGF pathway and is closely linked with VHL, which is why it's been tested in individuals with VHL disease and renal masses. The New England Journal publication, Eric Yonash, terrific piece of work, great control of disease in that subgroup of patients. But we're also seeing about 25% response rates in immune and VEGF refractory clear cell renal cancer. So heavily pretreated patients, we're seeing activity of this transcription, this inhibitor of this transcription factor, HIF2-alpha. There are a number of other transcription factor, HIF2-alpha targets that are being developed as well. But belzutifan has an incredibly ambitious development program. There's a randomized phase 3 versus everolimus in the third line setting, third, fourth, fifth line setting, so in immune and VEGF refractory disease. There are also frontline trials looking at it in combination with lenvatinib and pembrolizumab. There are second line trials looking in combination with cabozantinib. And there are adjuvant trials looking at it in combination in the adjuvant setting with pembrolizumab. It is the most exciting new target we currently have in randomized phase 3 in kidney cancer. And I will be expecting the results of these trials over the next 1 to 5 years. There is a good chance that they'll change practice. The one thing I'd like to say is that I think that it is such a specific target to HIF2-alpha that I think we can find a biomarker for this drug. And I think we should make efforts to do that.
So, Tom, thank you so much for joining us today. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you very much indeed.